All right, well, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming. I'd like to take this time to thank the co-authors here, Dr. Zheng, Devitt, and you. As the title states, I'm just going to discuss the preliminary findings of some of the work and research we've been doing out in eastern Nevada using a high-temperature resolution fiber optic cable and distributed temperature sensing to measure temperature profiles and to relate it to ET. The direct connection between the energy balance and the hydrologic cycle is that of ET, evapotranspiration. These processes are particularly important in arid and semi-arid regions where the dominant water loss within the vadose zone is due to these processes. Well, these same processes are also important for understanding groundwater recharge. Decreases in groundwater levels due to overpumping, climate change, could decouple the connection between the phreatophytes and groundwater, thereby changing the water distribution between the phreatic and vadose zones. Correlating soil moisture, water potential, and thermal gradients to the ET rates provide critical understanding when assessing the movement of mass and energy through the vadose zone and improve predictions of long-term water resources for ecological systems, human consumption. This is particularly important for eastern Nevada, where they're proposing a pipeline to pump groundwater from the subsurface down to southern Nevada for the residents. Obviously, it's important to really understand what the budget is and have a better idea and calculations for it. Now, the motivation here is based on studies similar to Lohide in 2005 and others that estimate phreatophytic ET using diurnal trends in hydrographs. So what we're really looking for is the diurnal trends, the up and down due to the turning on and off of the phreatophytic plants. Can we detect using some high temperature resolution instrument like DTS to see temperature changes and correlate it to soil moisture and soil water content? So therefore, the basic goals here are to assess whether temperature changes could be related to groundwater fluctuations and or shift in water source, going from the phreatic to the vadose zone and vice versa, or downwind recharge between the canopy interspace. Now the sites here, we have two sites. We have SV6 in Spring Valley and Snake SNK2. The results today are only gonna be on SV6. Now obviously we're in the Basin and Range province, very complicated geologic history. Two major aquifers, the basin fill and carbonate. Now the sites were chosen for three purposes here, or for three reasons. Shallow groundwater, less than 9 meters in depth, accessibility, and then pre-existing instrumentation, particularly a groundwater monitoring well with pressure transducer and EC towers, eddy covariance towers. Now the dominant shrubs, greasewood and big sage, most of the rooting within the top 3 to 4 meters, but the high density lateral root zone generally within the top meter. Now I've talked about FODTS, fiber optic distributed temperature sensing. This is a high resolution temperature sensor. Basically what it does is it sends a light through the fiber optic cable. As that light interacts with the molecules in the glass lattice of the cable, it backscatters light at different frequencies. Now the two frequencies of interest here are the anti-Stokes and Stokes. The anti-Stokes is temperature dependent, while the Stokes comparatively is temperature independent. The ratio of these two, using calculations built into the software, provide a very up to a 0.01 degrees Celsius accuracy with high temporal resolutions and high spatial resolutions of temperature for every meter of fiber optic cable. More details are provided by Selker et al. 2006 and Tyler 2009. Now the field work involved is the installation of two borings. The first boring, we installed a 7.6 centimeter PVC pole. Wrapped around this pole, we have fiber optic cable. Now the resolution here is the way it was wrapped around the pole was for every 1.14 vertical centimeters, we have 1 meter of cable. And as I mentioned before, 1 meter of cable is about one measurement of temperature. So that meter is an average temperature for that entire meter of cable. The second boring, we installed TDRs and HDUs. As you can see here, we have 6 TDRs at 30 and then 100 intervals after that, and then the 4 HDUs at 30, 3100, 200, and 280. Now, as I mentioned before, we already have a groundwater well out there with the pressure transducer, continuously monitoring, collecting data. Now, like many instruments, calibration is needed. What we do for our calibration is for the DTS, we wrap about 25 meters of fiber optic cable and place it in a constant temperature bath. Generally, we use an ice bath to actually calibrate for the entire fiber optic cable length. We deploy this instrument twice, one in April for about 16 hours, and then one in July for about 41 hours. The TDRs and HDUs were wired, connected in April, Now, we did manage to collect a little data during that period of time, but because of some mechanical problems, we didn't get this back up and running until late June. But since then, we've been measuring every 6 hours for TDR and HDU. Now, what we have here is soil profile, soil temperature profile within the top 6 meters of soil. And as you can see here, we have a nice diurnal fluctuation. We've got the depth on the vertical axis and the time on the x-axis, and of course, we have temperature in between. And you see nice diurnal fluctuations here in the top 30 to 40 centimeters over time, which is what we expect. Now, what's interesting, though, is this increase in temperature down at depth, which is approximately about 560 centimeters, capillary fringe. So using this DTS, we really want to see, is this due to the diurnal fluctuation of plants transpiring during the day and shutting off at night? So this is kind of what their goal is. We really want to see if this DTS can actually determine this. Well, here's a figure on the left-hand side is your depth of water over time. And this was over a period from late June to late August. As you see, we have about 40 centimeters in change in depth of water. Unfortunately, though, we really don't see the diurnal fluctuations like we would hope to at this site. In addition, if you look closer at the run time that we use the DTS, we're really looking at about 1.34 vertical centimeters in depth change, which is just at the lower resolution of the DTS. As you remember, we have 1.14 vertical centimeters for every meter of cable. So it's right there at the lower resolution. So unfortunately, we're really not seeing major changes here in regards to temperature. In addition, remember we saw earlier in that previous graph, we saw a bump in temperature down at the capillary fringe. Well, if we look at the profile here, in April, this is the vertical profile for one trace, so one measurement at that time, and we notice that the water temperature is actually warmer in April, and it cools off into late spring, into July. And so we think maybe that this warmer water was just a delayed response, and it actually warmed up the material just above the water table. Now looking at the time domain reflectometry results, water content, you see here we have a clear decrease in water content at the 30 centimeter level. Now this could be related to downward loss, but due to the higher sand in the texture, also warmer period time during the summer, and the high lateral root zone, it's most likely due to evaporation and transpiration processes, so upper water loss and root water uptake. Now clearly we see some increases both at the 100 and 200 centimeter levels. Here is the 100 increase, and then the light blue represents the 200 centimeter level. And this is probably related to the downward movement of snowmelt. Now moving over to the deeper TDR probes, we have here at the 300 level, very, very constant, very, very little change throughout that level. But you move down to the 400, a clear decrease again, right here. And we have minor amounts, it's mostly clay, but we do have some minor amounts of coarse sand. There are no roots, so we really think this is probably related to the decrease in the groundwater level. As we saw in the previous graph, a couple slides back, 40 centimeter drop in the groundwater level. So this is reacting to that. Now there's little change, unfortunately, in the 500 centimeter. Why that is, not sure. And maybe it's be delayed response, and it is a very slight decrease. So it's slightly tenuous, so we're not sure if it is due to a groundwater depth change or not. Now let's compare all these together. On the left side here, we have the DTS traces, so the temperature profile for April and in July. As you see here, obviously in those months, April is a cooler month versus July. We're going to have a higher thermal loading in July than we do in April, which would have an effect on the actual temperature profile near the surface. But if you start taking a look at the TDR results, well, it looks like we have a high water content during the April, which snow melt makes sense. July starts warming up, so we have more evaporation. So we're also changing, of course, the volumetric heat capacities, and which may give us the reason why we see this larger temperature change in July in the red trace right here. Now, if we move down, we do see the wetting front, particularly in July. In July, we see it move down to about 100 centimeters, but then both traces, both at the 300 level, start dropping off. and they've been pretty consistent down, pretty low water content at the 300. Then we start moving down, we increase water content down from 400 to 500, we're moving closer to the water table. Now, so the real results in discussion. DTS may provide some insightful information on water gradients within the subsurface, but we really can't really know how well this works until we do some inverse modeling, back out the water content using the temperature profiles. Now, we were able to detect, all right, yes, there's snow melt, percolated down to 30 to 40 centimeters within April, and then moved further down into July, down to about the 100 centimeter, a little bit before the 200 centimeter mark. Water released, of course, back up into the atmosphere via DT. Remember, we do have a high lateral root density within the top meter. Now, the 300 centimeter level shows persistent low water content, suggesting we need a significant amount of water to percolate that far. I'm sorry, significant amount of recharge needed for that deeper percolation. Now, some of the data I did not discuss was the HDU. We still need to review that data. But just a quick note that around the 280, we had a high potential, high suction going on with the DT, or I'm sorry, with the HDU. We also had a low water content. We moved down further, 400 to 500 centimeters. We have a much higher water content, suggesting possibly upward movement of the water from the water table. So in summary, really, what we have are really two possible hydrologic systems. We've got the shallower zone reacts quickly to seasonal snowmelt between 200 and maybe 300. And then we have the deep. We have the changes reacting to groundwater changes. Downwater recharge below 200 centimeters at the location was not measured. And the use of DTS for this example is probably too deep. These deeper systems, we just don't really see the major temperature changes at the water table, and as well as diurnal fluctuations. And it's just another thing we didn't see in the groundwater well data. So what do we need to do next? Well, one, we want to simulate thermal pulses using as a means to estimate water content profile, some inverse modeling. As I mentioned, deeper zones don't seem to work out very well. So why don't we try shallower zones where groundwater is roughly at 2 to 3 meters? And then install additional probes, drain gauges, things like that to actually measure the amount of recharge within the zone. And then conduct longer run times with the DTS. So we can actually see a better resolution in regards to depth to water over a period of time. And so the references, of course, I would like to acknowledge all of my committee, the UNLV Geoscience, TISA Research Institute, Division of Hydrosciences, and then the EPSA Corps grant, particularly Gail Dana. And with that, I'll open up to questions. Well, the DTS was wrapped on the outside of the fiber optic cable. I'm sorry, the DTS was wrapped on the outside of the PVC pipe.
Right.
So inside, we actually sealed the base, and then we filled it up with the same material as we did in the annular space.
Okay, so there's still air between the cable and the well casing.
Very little. There's a slight possibility of that. What we did, though, when we cut out, we used a pipe threader to thread the outside of the PVC pipe. So we were able to make it enough diameter, small enough to prevent that, but also big enough to make it fit snug into the ridges. So it wrapped around all the way down.
Okay.